up front, Leroy Lita. I think if you did a Google Images search of Leroy Lita, you'd
don't probably... do a Google Image search of Leroy Lita at work.
Well, have Say Search on if you do.
As Brian McDermott stages a dressing room lock-in to motivate the Reading squad, we've decided to lock ourselves in for over an hour as we force ourselves to talk about a team aimlessly drifting towards another bottom half championship finish. We'll give our views on the 1-0 defeat of Brighton, the 1-1 draw with Cardiff, and try to figure out how such a talented group can still underperform on such a regular basis. Pub Chat sees us run down our Reading Bad Attitude 11, plus we'll answer your questions in the mailbag. All that and much, much more on the Tyler Senn Podcast, episode number 90. Hello and welcome. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersenn.com. 90 episodes in and you're still with us. You've got better patience than I. But we thank every single one of you who's listened, whether it is to all 90 or if this is your first one. Very big welcome to you and hitting that download button. And also, again, massive, massive thank you to everyone who has helped support our crowdfunding campaign. Still going strong. We still need your help to help make this on our drive to semi-professional joke of a podcast status. But should you sign up for the upper echelons of support, there is an incentive for you. One of our brand spanking new Tyler Senn mugs, which feature fantastic artwork from Sam Hardacre, showing our getting off the bandwagon style over the past few years.
Go back and listen to all 90 episodes and see how many bandwagons we've got on and jumped off, and that would be quite a homework task for you, wouldn't it?
Indeed, and the man who's been here for the vast majority of these 90 episodes is Mr. Johnny Williams, the voice you've just heard, our deputy editor. Johnny, hello.
Yep, attendances are dropping off not only in the Medeski Stadium, but round here as well. It's just me today. I like to feel like we're the loyal ones. We're not the plastics. We don't just turn up for the FA Cup quarterfinals or Wembley trips. We're the loyal ones. We're there the whole time.
Yeah, we're still here trucking away. No Steve this week, no Mark, no handbags, no...
Not throwing shade on them at all.
No John Keane, no Westy. Nobody, not even Rob Langham. Can't get anyone.
We're the committed ones.
Indeed.
All the ones with nothing better to do.
Well, quite. Well, they do have valid excuses. I vetted their excuse slips, their permission slips to miss this podcast very thoroughly, so they've got every excuse to miss it. But people that don't have such great excuses are Reading's players at the moment. Another winless week goes by, and we're going to delve right into that in the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So, as we mentioned, a winless week for Reading coming hot off the heels of that 2-0 home defeat to Crystal Palace that saw us knocked out of the FA Cup. It was back to Championship action with games against Brighton and Cardiff. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the job done in the league either, despite Brian McDermott's rallying cry to see our league form improve. It just didn't happen, did it, Johnny?
No, it didn't. And I mean, I guess on the face of it, you can... With a heavy dose of realism, say this is about where we are as a club now. I mean, Brighton, okay, they've dropped off sort of from their phenomenal start, but they're still a top four side, and patently we're not. And Cardiff are a team that are pushing for the playoffs. So again, you know, a draw at home against a playoff chasing side when we are a lower mid table championship side isn't a bad result. But I think it's just a case of. The team doesn't seem to be particularly evolving. It doesn't seem to be particularly playing well consistently. And there's so many frustrations amongst the fan base, I think, that you almost felt as soon as we went 1-0 down against Brighton that we wouldn't get it back. And I imagine that most people thought even 1-0 up against Cardiff, that wasn't enough and we couldn't hold on. And both of those came true. It just seems to be the case that this Reading team, like the Reading teams from the last, certainly last season, maybe not the playoff season we had in 2013-14, do just seem to be dropping off, drifting towards... nothingness yet again, and it's that frustration for the Reading fans, I think.
Well, it's a very rare feeling for us as a fan base to have. You look back probably sort of 15 years, so yep. You have to probably go back to the Burns era really to find marches where we've not either been fighting relegation or gunning for promotion, even if it's been an outside playoff chase. Yep. At least we've had that going into the final weeks of the season. We've not got anything, really. We've got a few points we need to rack up just to make it mathematically certain that we'll stay up. There is an 8-point gap. It's hard to see that being overhauled, but...
Hey, Colin's got his Rotherham boys on a roll, hasn't he?
He does.
Suddenly that 1-0 win looks like a pretty positive result in the grand scheme of things, doesn't it?
Any win is a very positive result at this stage. But going into the Brighton game, as we mentioned, it comes after that Crystal Palace defeat. There were a couple of changes, most notably a formation switch. Brian went back to 4-4-2. That meant Matty Vidra was restored up front alongside the cup-tied Jan Kermigan. But notably, Oliver Norwood, who has come in for a fair bit of stick from us on this very show over the past few weeks, he was dropped. Michael Hector partnering Danny Williams in the midfield in a straight 4-4-2. Obviously, it didn't work. We lost 1-0. Did have chances, though. And it's a theme that continues throughout the week. But just in the on the Brighton game alone, Michael Hector and Ola John both having fantastic chances and just not taking them.
Yeah, and I think we'll come on to the case of Ola John, the curious case of Ola John, if you like, in the Cardiff recap as well, because again he had a couple of glorious chances, and indeed against Crystal Palace he spurned a few chances as well. So you know, that's certainly a problem with Ola John, that he doesn't quite have that composure or ability to finish off chances. And I mean, you can sort of say that these wrong turns or wrong moments are costing us valuable points, because you know, that was another 1-0 defeat for us against Brighton. If John puts in a chance against Cardiff at 1-0, makes it 2-0, that's a lot more difficult for them to come back from. And I think ultimately we're sort of being the masters of our own downfall, because you can see that we're generally in games and we're generally creating chances. We just don't have the composure or the ability to finish them at the moment. And I think that's one of the more worrying things, because we look pretty solid defensively. Sammy Amiobi waltzing through the Reading defence aside, but in front of goal we look a bit toothless still.
Yeah, we are the second highest shot takers in the Championship behind only Hull, who are obviously gunning for that top two spot. But unfortunately, yeah, we're not amongst the very highest scorers. Most of that, if you go and read my further reading column up on thetullison.com, I sort of explain why. You just look at the amount of shots we're taking from outside the box. 55% of our shots are coming outside the box now. How often do you honestly expect to score from there?
Yeah.
You're going to get the odd scream, and we have been, you know, we've been blessed with some fantastic goals this season.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, keepers are expected to make those saves from outside the box. And it doesn't necessarily apply to some of the chances this week, but in generally, it's just been not a high enough quality of a chance. But as mentioned, Ola and Michael Hector both having those opportunities. The fans that went, not very happy. Our match reporter labelling it fairly spineless, and a lot of other, there were about 300 Royals that made the trip. Massive credit to you for going.
Yeah.
If you are one of those people that went down, and they just weren't happy. They described players just waltzing around the field. And that anger sort of manifested itself at the full-time whistle, because Brian McDermott kept the players in the dressing room for about 45 minutes after the game. And this is what he had to say to Charles Watts about it a few days later in his weekly news conference. He says, "It wasn't about it being a bad, good or indifferent performance. It was about what we are as a football club. It was about saying, come on guys, this has been going on for too long in the league now. We can't say we've had a good season just because we got to the quarterfinal of the cup or a semi-final of a cup. We've got to give the fans value for money game in, game out. That's so important, and that means work rate. If it's not going well, you do all you can to win the second ball, win headers, all the ugly stuff." I think he's saying what I think the majority of Reading fans would agree with that.
Absolutely. I think you can sort of excuse your team playing badly if they're trying hard. I think there are a lot of players in the team, not naming names, who sort of are a bit lackadaisical at times or don't put a full shift in. And you can sort of see, you can identify those players on the pitch. And yeah, it is about really giving the fans value for money, because if you look at the crowds that are dwindling inside the Medeski Stadium, I mean, officially the crowd were, what, 17,400 against Cardiff?
And 2,000 from South Wales.
Yeah, and I think to any casual observer, it certainly didn't look like that amount.
No.
So you can see that the fans are, you know, voting with their feet. You know, whether a season ticket holder and you've already paid, or whether you think about turning up on the day and you decide not to. The fans want to see quality on the pitch, they want to see effort on the pitch, and they want to, I think that above all, they want to see people that are passionate about the club and about the game. And I think at the moment, with the way the squad is composed, you're not necessarily seeing that week in, week out.
Yeah, and this is the biggest frustration for me, and again, I sort of summed it up in my further reading column. It's not the players aren't doing their jobs, because I think they're generally doing their jobs, and most weeks, we've had very few weeks on our player ratings where it's been a shocking set of ratings. If you go and look back, generally, we've handed out very few fours, tens this season. So it's not been players that are just absolutely terrible. It's players not going that extra mile. It's players, as Brian says, not going for that 50-50 ball, winning those headers, doing the ugly stuff. They're just doing what they need to do to sort of get by. And they're just sort of cruising through games. They're not going into those higher gears. They're not making that extra dart into the box. How often do you see a midfielder make that sprinting burst into the box to get there late? You know, like someone like a Frank Lampard would do for Chelsea, or a Steve Sidwell would do for Reading sort of 10 years ago. You just don't see it from players. And yeah, you get the exciting times and you see an Ola John take on a man, or Gareth McCleary, who did have a good game against Cardiff on Saturday. But by and large, they're just they're just not given that extra sort of 5% that you really need in the championship to thrive.
Yeah, and I think one other thing you can tell is if you watch sort of the first 10 or 15 minutes of games, I can't remember us ever dominating and taking it to a team. We always seem to be happy to let them come onto us and try and play ourselves into the game. And as a fan, that sort of frustrates you as well, because especially if you're at home, you want to say, right, this is our turf, this is our patch, you've come here, we are going to control the game and we're going to dominate. And I don't really remember that happening many times this season.
Well, that's what they were doing during that purple patch, weren't they? Because they were getting out of the blocks early against teams like Burnley, against Middlesbrough. Remember Danny Williams scoring a header in the first minute, and that was an example.
18 seconds, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was an example of a midfielder taking a gamble, going for it and getting rewarded. We're just not seeing enough. And to be fair, I picked out Michael Hector in my further reading column because I thought, and me and you have had a good little discussion in the comment section. I very much encourage anyone to go in and join in. We really do appreciate when people drop a comment down and join in the discussion. It's what we're here for. But my argument was, yes, he did his job screening the defence very well. Cardiff only scored the once, and that was a bit of a dodgy goal. We'll come on to that in a second. But he didn't go that extra mile. He didn't think, you know what, we're getting on top in this game. I'm going to start making a few more extra runs forward. I'm going to help us drag us back into this game. I'm going to make that tackle. We've seen that from Hector in the past. We saw it against Fulham. We've seen it in other times this season, but it just wasn't there. It's just no consistency from far too many people in the squad.
Yeah, but I think this is something to do with Brian McDermott's, the way he sets his side up as well, because it's very structured. And there's an article that I've written that will be going up on Tuesday, I think, about how Reading do when we get in front. And it's interesting to note that in the five games we've got in front under Brian McDermott, we've won four and drawn one of them. And that is, I think, because of the way Brian McDermott sets his side up structurally. It's very good in terms of shielding a lead and just frustrating teams, breaking them down eventually. We've seen that against Cardiff, where I think we got a goal slightly against the run of play as it was, against Rotherham again, where we just had to be patient, sit in, and eventually break them down. And I think that's just a style of a McDermott team. It doesn't really encourage much individuality or much gambling, if you like. If you think back to the team that he took up in 11-12, it was very much a team that was around its structure, around the parts that all worked and all worked together. I don't think there's much room for McCleary and John aside, there's not much room for flair, individuality, trying something different, taking a gamble. So I think that's why Michael Hector in particular is just given that task of sitting there in front of the back four, don't let anything get past you. I do agree that, you know, he's got, when he wants to, he's got a lot of pace on him and he can charge forward into the box. But when you've got Williams and Quinn there, who are a bit more mobile, if you like, and can do that sort of box-to-box role, I think it was just part of Hector's game to just say, sit there. And obviously the manager has given him those instructions.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I think he's had a decent game and he's done that job pretty well. I looked back at the goal and I wasn't overly enamoured with his very casual jogging back to try and get hold of Amiobi. But by and large, and he does that job well. And I can totally see Brian McDermott setting his team up to be hard to beat. He used to do this, didn't he? He used to try and keep the game tight for an hour, maybe nick a goal, and then just squeeze the game. Or if you need to win it late, he used to bring on a Lafondra, do something like that, stick Joby Mackenough in the middle, and go and win the game from there. So I can understand if he feels that his team are vulnerable and not full of confidence, that you go for defensively. And when asked by Tim Deller after the game, why did you go and play one up front? Because we talked about the 4-4-2 at Brighton. It was back to 4-1-4-1 for a home game against Cardiff. And he sort of said, well, why have you only got one up front at home? And he said, well, you know, it's a result that led us to some good results. You know, the wins over Rotherham and Charlton, the draw with Fulham, and that good FA Cup run, the win over West Brom. So you can absolutely see why he's gone back to it. But I'm not a massive fan of playing one up front at home. And I think once safety is mathematically secured, or virtually mathematically secured, you really have to give the fans something to start looking forward to next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think this is a McDermott style, but I don't think he sets his teams up to be particularly gung-ho, particularly charge forward, we're going to score one more than you type of manager. He's not that sort of manager. He's more about structure, controlling the game. And you can see that in the way we play as well. It's very patient and it's very structured in terms of what we do. It's a little bit of probing this way and that way. It reminds me more and more of Nigel Adkins and Brendan Rodgers' style of play every time you see it. Not quite to that extent.
I was going to say, not quite as much sideways
passing.
We're
not quite
on.
Being bored into our into submission here. But no, I think Brian is a manager who's more about structure, more about defensive stability before going all out attack and trying to score five goals. I mean, in terms of the formation, horses for courses. I think, you know, if you're at home, yes, maybe you want to play two up front, but you've got to work it out for the strength of your opposition as well. And I mean, on the argument of playing one up front, it's in vogue, isn't it? So many teams do it across the Premier League now that, you know, I mean, if Arsenal turned up and play a 4-5-1 at home, you don't see the fans there saying, let's stick two up front. Or, you know, if you've got Aguero up front for Man City, it's just the way of the world now, if you like, in this modern structure. Although the holding midfielder, I think, is a bit excessive,
a bit overkill at home.
Yeah.
Well, the other news, sort of talking points coming out of that Cardiff game, again, no Norwood. He didn't make the team. It was a midfield of Williams and Quinn with Hector behind. Norwood dropped down to the bench. So two games in a row, he hasn't started. Something to keep an eye on, I think, going into the final few games of the season. As I mentioned, just Kermigan going up front. Did have chances. Kermigan having a one-on-one, couldn't bury, or it was a bit of a tough one. It was sort of getting away from him. Ola John, fantastic one-on-one chance at the end of the half. How he's not finished that, I'm not sure. Did get the goal, though, and a fantastic goal as well. Gareth McCleary finally showing what we've been begging to see from him all season. He came on as a substitute for the injured Hal Robson-Kanu. No word yet how long he's going to be out. I think he's being assessed ahead of international duty with Wales, but Gareth McCleary comes off the bench, gets a goal, good little flick on from Kermigan in the build-up as well, sort of doing what he does best, linking the play. And at that point, you just thought, yeah, I like this.
Yeah, and the Gareth McCleary of old, dare we say, he looked very much up for it. He was taking on his men at will down the right-hand flank, and you could see that partnership with Gunter as well. And, you know, it was a cracking finish. We know that Gareth McCleary is a very acrobatic player who can perform magic. You remember that goal he scored against? Was it Burnley?
Yeah, very similar, but from a closer range, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, we know that we got this in the locker, but unfortunately, we've not seen it enough over the last 2 years, really, partly because he hasn't been playing, but partly because he's been woefully out of form. But given the opportunity, unleashed, say, do what you want, do what you can, given that little bit of freedom to, you know, to make something happen, and he's made something happen.
Yeah, gets the goal. Reading go one up, and as mentioned, Ola John has a fantastic chance to make it 2-0 before half-time, and the game would be put to bed. I know Cardiff are a playoff-chasing team, but they looked anything but on this occasion. Really, really lacklustre, and just goes to show how much the Championship's been there for the taking, Johnny. How often have you sat there and watched a Reading game this year thinking, wow, that team's actually really better than us?
There haven't been that many, but equally, there haven't been that many games when I've thought, you know, this Reading side is a lot better than
we are. What I'm saying is it's there for the taking, and they've just come out of these 50-50 games or 55-45 games, and they just seem to be on the losing side far too often, or not getting the 3 points that they need. Happened again here on Saturday. Reading comfortably in control, as we mentioned, having those chances. They make a double sub, Cardiff. Sami Amiobi comes on, does a bit of a Harlem Globetrotters impression, controlling the ball with his hand, bundles his way through a few defenders, gets a shot off, pings back out, and goes straight to the Cardiff striker, buries it 1-1. And that's, you know, that was pretty much game over. Neither side really threatened from that point. Matty Vidra had half a chance after coming on as a sub, but apart from that, it just petered out. But again, unfortunately, we're talking about a bad refereeing decision from Mr. Drysdale, completely missing an obvious handball. I think everyone in the ground saw it apart from him. Yeah, referees can make mistakes. I'm not going to hammer a guy for just making one simple error, but it's a real shame. Again, we're talking about a big refereeing decision leading to a goal.
Yeah, I mean, it was a clear handball. I think Reading fans were getting very frustrated at him before that. I didn't think he actually had that bad a game. I think when you get all these 50-50 decisions that can go for you and can go against you, when one goes against you, you then look out for the next one going against you as well. There were a few times when we got 50-50 decisions that, you know, possibly could have gone the other way as well. So I didn't think he had as bad a game as many fans were making out, but I think that decision certainly cost us. I don't think it's as simple as saying if he'd given that handball, then we would have won the game, because, you know, there are 35 minutes left to play, and I think at that stage that Cardiff had a little bit more impetus and were just about getting on top.
Oh, I don't know. I can't see us doing anything but winning that game if that goal doesn't go in.
We'll agree to disagree.
Okay, fair enough.
But I mean, you know, you've got to blame yourselves as well, because Sami Amiobi gets the ball 40 yards out. Okay, so he's handballed it to take it there. But to waltz through two lines of four, get a shot away, and then for the striker to come in on the rebound as well, you've only got yourselves to blame for that. There's no way that a striker who's only been on the pitch, hasn't even played himself into the game, can waltz through your entire team and get a shot off, and you and you know, expect him to hit it wide and he hits the post. I mean, it's one of these concentration things that has just blighted our season as much as anything. You can talk about the refereeing decisions, you can talk about 50-50 games, but like I said earlier, we've been architects of our own downfall so many times. And you know, you think about taking the chances, but you think about giving the chances away as well. How many defensive errors or how many miss-hit passes have led to chances for the opposition? So I think over the course of 46 games, you know, you can't say we've been unlucky in 15 or 20 matches, because the league is structured so that you end up where you deserve to end up, in a sense. And I think we've only got ourselves to blame for drawing this game.
Yeah, you want to take the referee's decisions out of the game.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Ola John scores that goal. We're not even talking about this. Yeah. But I do think they've had a little bit more unluck than positive luck, but that's just the way things go. It's just any sort of streak you get. I still think Reading are in a slightly false position in terms of general overall way games have flowed and how we've not come out with goals. But like you mentioned, there's a reason for it, whether it's errors, whether it is an unfortunate refereeing decision or stuff. It's just the way things happen, and you have 90 minutes to take those moments out of a game, and they've just not done it enough. So, yeah, the season's drifting aimlessly, unfortunately, at this stage. Were you slightly surprised to see Andrew Taylor making a return at the starting lineup on Saturday at left back in place of Jordan Obita?
Initially I was, but then I think there are a couple of reasons for it. One, he's playing against his former club. And the other reason being, at this stage of the season, we're almost safe. You want to be deciding your squad for next season. And ultimately, Andrew Taylor is a player who could be a backup left back for us next season. He had a poor game the other week. I can't remember what game it was he played in.
Yeah, Huddersfield, he gave away the first goal.
Yeah, and possibly he was at fault for the third one as well, although I thought that was the right back. But, you know, Andrew Taylor legitimately is a player who could be with us again next season. Brian McDermott wants to see what he's got. And so, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago I said on the podcast, you don't want to be experimenting. You still want to be putting out sides that can get the best result, because that's what you need at the moment. That's the way you're going to bring the fans back, if you get positive results and win matches. And the only way to do that is to play your best side.
Yeah, Reading stuck in a sort of muddle of mediocre Championship sides this season. We are currently 17th with 9 to play, with 45 points. The team to sort of keep half an eye on is 22nd place MK Dons. They've got 37. Behind them is Charlton on 32. So, you know, that's 13 points behind Reading and Bolton, who seem all but gone with 26 points. So, you know, they can get 19 more. They're 19 points behind Reading and can only get 24. And I think my loose maths means, I think if Reading beat them in their next game, that'll be curtains for Bolton in terms of catching us. So realistically, it's only that final relegation spot you've got to keep half an eye on. But there's a lot of, you look at the Championship table, Johnny, and there's a lot of big sides. You know, Reading fans are right to gnash their teeth and complain, but there's a lot of teams in that mix that would have also hoped for great seasons and have fallen apart. I mean, you look, Wolves 12th and 48, you've got Forest 46 points there in 15th.
Got Fulham are slipping into the relegation zone. They've got £10 million Ross McCormack up front.
They're on 38 points as well. Brentford as well, coming off that, you know, playoff campaign and all the positive goodwill they had last season. They're stuck on 43 points, 2 points behind Reading. So a lot of good. This isn't just a situation levelled at Reading. You can go up. You can go to QPR at 11th on 51. Is it a bad league this season?
I'm not sure that it's a bad league. I think it's an ever unpredictable league. I think next season, once the new TV deal kicks in and you get all the relegated sides coming down with vastly more money, then you're going to see a very, very different league. And getting up to the top division is going to be even tougher in the future. Will that increase the quality of the league? Hopefully, because you'll have more money trickling down into it just about. But I don't think this is a poor league. I think it's just a league that contains a lot of teams who have been there and done that and ultimately are frustrated that they're not getting back up there.
My only theory, and this is absolutely completely anecdotal and it might just be my own stupid theory, but I look at it and I look at so many games now and I look at teams that are afraid to go for games, that are really afraid, set out their stall saying, this is how we play, you come and beat us. Too many teams now are trying to be clever and get results by switching their style and doing things like that. There's not enough teams that just go balls to the wall and say, we play this way, you try and beat us. We're not afraid if we lose a game, because if we're going to win more than we lose with this team. So, and that's probably to do with the stakes there are of either dropping out of the Championship or, you know, trying to stay in that. Yeah. It's much better, you know, financially to stay in a load of games and nick dirty 1-0s to get you into the playoffs than go gung-ho trying to win games 2-3-0 and then falling flat.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you give a lot of credit to a side like Bournemouth last year who, well, won the league on the last day in the end, and I think they scored over 100 goals last season as well. So they were very much a team that was in the mould of, we will score one more goal than you, we're going to attack, you sort of just deal with us. I mean, it relies on you having a team that can impose itself. Is this Reading team a team that can impose itself? No. I don't think there are many teams in the division that can fully impose themselves on other sides. You look at the teams like the likes of Derby and Middlesbrough, I think even they're the only two sides that I would look at and say, you could impose your will on our team and we would struggle. Even teams like Brighton, who are up there at the moment, Hull are another team who I think are a very good side as well. But even teams like Brighton, Cardiff, as we've just seen, these promotion, Sheffield Wednesday, these playoff-chasing sides, I don't think there are many teams that are that far above us, or indeed any other side in the division.
No, and you just look at the goals scored total was interesting. Burnley, top of the league, 61 goals from 38 games, so a good ratio there, nearly sort of two a game. But beyond that, there's not a lot of high-scoring teams. Brighton, 52 in 38. Middlesbrough, 48 in 37. Hull, 50 in 37. Sheffield Wednesday have got a few, 56 and 38, but then Cardiff, 49 and 38. It's just not a lot. There is just not a lot of difference, and it is another season that Reading will have to regret because man for man, they have matched up, and even game for game, they've matched up and been in just about every single game they've played, but they've not done enough to get the results. Same, exactly the same this week, and that's just that. But anyway, let's talk about something much more positive in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So, only one major news story to talk about in News Bites this week, and it relates to the Supporters Trust at Reading, otherwise known as STAR. They are launching the very first Reading FC Hall of Fame, Johnny.
Yeah, this is quite an interesting idea. It seems to be, again, another idea that's in vogue of introducing Halls of Fame. I'm excited to see who are the inaugural 11 players that are going to be put in, because there's certainly a big roll call of names going back, well, for 125-130 years, yep, that you can see being invited in.
Well, absolutely. Here's some more information on it. They say, Stars Reading FC Hall of Fame launches on Thursday the 24th of March, almost 10 years to the day that Reading clinched promotion to the Premier League for the first time. The first 11 names to go into the Hall of Fame will be announced at a presentation from 7:30 at the Princess Suite Medeski Stadium, and we expect some of the recipients of this honour to be with us and say a few words on the night. Come and find out who they are. This event precedes the Fans Forum with Brian McDermott and is open to STAR members and invited guests only. But you can join STAR at the door on the night. The Hall of Fame intends to be a significant input into the whole history of our club and will honour around 150 outstanding individuals over the next few years. I think the target is to get 150 in for the 150th anniversary, which is in 2021.
That certainly does make sense, doesn't it? I mean, it should be a really good evening. Like I say, I think there are a number of players, not only in our recent history, but going way back down the years, that you can reel off the top of your head in terms of who deserves to go in. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how they're going to honour them in terms of sort of like physically and what the names are going to be as well. I think, you know, it will be a really good way for, I think, the younger fans to really teach themselves about the history of the club as well, because sometimes you forget that this club has been around for nearly 150 years.
Yeah, massive. What,
the oldest club or second
oldest?
I think we were the
oldest club left in the FA Cup in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're certainly one of the oldest clubs in England. So, yeah, no, it's a great way to honour the past and to learn more about the club for those names that you haven't heard of as well.
Absolutely. Get yourself down there if you can on Thursday night. I said you can join STAR on the door. All that money goes to good courses. It's not just stuff fritter away money by any stretch of the imagination. It all goes into helping your fellow fans out. So very much encourage you to get down there. If you needed any other extra incentive to be there, I will be there. I was very kind enough to be one of the invited guests. God knows why.
They're obviously not going in the Hall of Fame, are you? For services to podcasting.
I don't think I'm going to quite make it.
Okay. Maybe by 2021.
Well, you know, if I'm still doing this podcast by 2021, maybe. If we bring up 10 years. It is, in fact, 5 years almost to the day. I think 5 years ago tomorrow, I registered at the tarlhurstend.co.uk as a website.
On Tuesday.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it will be. That, and I think the website officially launched on the 29th. So we're coming up to five. And you were there. You've been there the whole time, Johnny.
It's been a long and emotional 5 years, hasn't it? You should have said I'd brought over some party poppers, some champagne. The party poppers would have just about worked on podcast. I'm not sure about the champagne. Maybe if we start slurring our words in the next section, then we can, you know, you'll actually know that we've had the champagne here.
Yeah, we'll have a post or two to officially mark the 5-year anniversary. But it goes without saying, each and every week, that we very much appreciate everyone who's written for us, and more importantly, everyone who reads the website, because we wouldn't still be doing this 5 years from now if everyone had gone, what a load of rubbish. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people still going, that's an absolute load of rubbish.
Yeah.
But as long as you're reading it, we don't care. You know, and if you do think we're rubbish, get involved. Mm. This website was never set up to be a closed shop for people like me to just ramble on. This was supposed to be by the fans, for the fans. It was supposed to be that place where people could come, write their opinion down, or debate in a nice, sort of safe environment away from, well, let's be honest.
Away from some trolls.
Yes. In web forums, you do often get a lot of trolls that are there to sort of wind up, and we try to keep that sort of way, if we can, from the website. You know, some slip through the cracks, like, you know, Raw Hoops.
Yeah.
Bucks Raw.
Our assistant editors, yeah.
Yeah, they slip through the cracks. But, yeah, come down on to the Manchester Stadium. It's at 7:30 on Thursday night. I'll be there. I might be wearing a Tyler Sten T-shirt. Don't know. Might make myself more identifiable, so you can throw tomatoes at me or whatnot. One of only two Tyler Sten T-shirts in existence. So we should narrow it down who's wearing it. It'll either be me or you.
Well, and I won't be there.
And so. You won't be there. There you go. So exactly. But anyway, that's enough of me rambling on. So get yourself down there. So it should be a good night. If only just for the fans forum with Brian McDermott. I've been to one with Brian before. Very open, very candid. And it's a great chance to sort of to get your questions into the manager. And I can't remember him ducking away from questions in the past. Mm. It is a closed shop environment. So it's not open to reporting. So we won't be reporting anything Brian says on the Tyler Sten. We will give a write-up of what happened in the Hall of Fame and who went in there. But yeah, the only way to find out what Brian's got to say will be to get yourselves down there.
So if you're one of the McDermott out trolls on Twitter, you can go and say it to his face and see if you say the same thing.
Indeed, absolutely. See if you've got the guts to say it to his face. But anyway, we do have a little bit more information on the Hall of Fame up on the TylerSen.com. You can always check out Star's website as well. In the meantime, speaking of Hall of Fame, this is more Hall of Shame as we look at, in pub chat at our Reading FC Bad Attitude 11s.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, it's a welcome back to Pub Chat. First Pub Chat in a while. We did record one last week, but as mentioned on last week's show, it very unfortunately got lost to the technology gods. They swallowed it all up. So unfortunately, you didn't get our Pub Chat on reasons to still be interested for the rest of the season. What it has done, though, it means that our first Pub Chat back is a reader suggestion from a few weeks ago. I do apologise, I can't remember who suggested this one, but it was for a Reading FC Bad Attitude 11. Now, I'll preface all of this by saying you can only really go by what's been out in the public domain and what has been speculated on. I do not know any of these players individually, so they could be really nice people deep down, but I'm only going off idle speculation and gossip and press mongering. So if you do want to stick up for yourself, thetylersend@gmail.com will get you on this show. Join the ranks of John Halls, Shaka Hislop, Elroy Cromier, Stuart Lovell.
Joel Hufford. To come, yeah.
We've had lots of, there you go, an illustrious panel of guests. Anyway, without further ado, first of all, should I go for some of the listener suggestions first, or do you want to hear mine first?
Oh, so it's you. Go for yours first, yeah.
Okay, I'll go for mine first.
Because you've got a formation as well, so, you know, that's what we like.
Yes, I have had to fudge it a little bit. So my Bad Attitude 11 starts with Jamie Ashdown in goal. The reason for it is, you may remember Jamie Ashdown, a keeper that came through the academy here. He just was getting a run in the team in the 2003-04 season. A displaced Marcus Hanneman. Looked like he was going to be the goalkeeper of the future. And then he decided not to go and sign a new contract and buggered off to Portsmouth. So for that, he makes my Bad Attitude 11. To be fair, it was very hard to pick a goalkeeper because we've generally had good eggs. Bobby Mikhailov was my only other suggestion.
Yeah, no, my suggestion is not at all a bad attitude, more just a bad ass. So
okay,
we'll come on to that.
Okay, at the back I have Greg Halford, who I think goes without explaining. Ibrahima Sonko, who is undoubtedly a Reading legend, but unfortunately attitude problems got the better of him in his final months at the club, where he went refused to play for the reserves and generally had a bit of a huff and didn't stay around the club much there. We have an interview with Sonko where he talks about that coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Matt Mills, who memorably gave the finger to the East Stand.
Let's all do a Millsy.
Yeah, he makes it. And at left back, I think I've rather ironically put him there because I think he refused to ever play there.
Yeah.
Royston Drenthe.
Left back in the changing rooms.
Yes. Again, his left attitude goes out of question. Very happy to give it the bants. But when it came to giving it work rate and 90 minutes of effort on the pitch, nowhere to be seen. In the midfield, this one's a bit harsh. Mark Riley, who went back to Scotland because he was reportedly homesick. Couldn't hack the third tier under Tommy Burns.
I've not heard of him, so clearly he couldn't hack it.
Yeah, it's a little bit harsh, you know, being homesick. But still, this is my bad attitude 11 and I'm sticking with it. His midfield compatriots, Emers Faye, yeah, who went on strike alongside Sonks, and our record signing that was absolutely useless, the new Sidwell, he was not.
I was always impressed with Emers Faye in the 45 minutes that I saw him.
I was going to say, I don't know how much time you had to be impressed with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, it only takes a minute to make an impression. Yeah. And he did make an impression, but then he left.
Well, he's made my bad attitude 11. Alongside him, a man whose head wasn't right for that trip to Sunderland.
His hair wasn't right most of the time either.
Agreed. Danny Guthrie. And completing the midfield, I'm going to stick him in the midfield because he hates playing there. Nick Blackman, who was pretty sulky throughout his entire time at Reading, really. You only have to go and look at his no-sell celebration at Derby away. Mm. And just generally, just a sulk. And I'm not sad to see him go in the personality stakes. I miss his goals from this season, but don't miss his attitude.
I don't miss the £2.5 million we got for him. He wasn't even on the bench for Derby against Forest on Saturday.
No.
Not even on the bench.
No, absolutely. He hasn't scored since netting that goal against Bristol City in the last minute. So, yeah, good one, Nick. You really had a point to prove to everyone, and you've made it.
Good one, Nick. Blackman or Hammond?
Both. Mm. Absolutely massive props to our main man, Nicky H, for getting that deal done.
He's Nick now, not Nicky.
Yeah, well, whatever. It'll always be Squeaky to me, as loyal readers of the Whiff will remember. And up front, Leroy Lita. Do I need to say more?
No.
And again, controversial considering, and I've put him forward and voted for him as Reading's all-time cult hero, but I'm going to put Robin Friday in there because as much as you love his antics, and he was a maverick, there's no doubt about that, and scored some fantastic goals and stuff, he did have an incredibly bad attitude. Yeah. A very unprofessional approach to the game, which arguably stopped him reaching his full potential, and some of his off-field antics and stuff were stuff you'd probably get locked up for today. So, cracking player, but he did have a bad attitude. So, Robin Friday, you make it. And the team is managed by Alan Pardew. Need I say more after his refusal to condemn Balassi for the penalty last week.
Even if you weren't young enough to remember the absolute betrayal in 2002 or 2003, just last week will have instantly put you off the man. I used to respect him and think he was one day going to be the England manager because I think he's done remarkably well everywhere he's gone just about, but no, after last week. And then throwing shade at Jamie Carragher as well, I mean. No.
Yeah, he's just we had our words on him on last week's show.
A thoroughly dislikable person.
Indeed. Right, so who makes your bad attitude 11? I know you've taken a slightly different slant.
Yeah, only for a couple of players really, because like you said with the likes of Jamie Ashdown, it's not really a bad attitude. So I sort of went for just them being a badass, like a downright cool person. So in goal I've got Marcus Hahnemann because he's gone back to Colorado. I believe he talked quite enthusiastically on gun control and the fact that he keeps a gun in his house. I think that was part of the Joel Hufford interview.
Yeah.
Joel mentioned that Marcus was one of these people. So, you know, he gets a few cool points in my book.
So badass rather than bad attitude. We'll allow it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd hope so, because otherwise I wouldn't have a goalkeeper. Sonko, like you say, complete legend, but just for that moment where he went on strike with MS Faye was... yeah, a little bit annoying for most people. Matt Mills, again, let's all do the Millsy. Not much more to say there. And in defence, the other person I've got in defence, Andre Bique.
Yes, the Burnley meltdown.
Yes, the throwing his shirt off and just generally acting like a bit of a madman. So I think, again, another quality player, but a couple of screws loose, I think, in his head. So he was always a little bit on edge, wasn't he?
Yeah, you never quite knew what you were going to get from him.
No. That's my three in defence. I've gone for a five across the midfield. Royston Drenthe, need we say more. Emers Faye, again, need we say more. Danny Guthrie, another one you've got. Ricky Newman.
He's more badass than bad attitude again.
Yeah, no, this is the thing, bad attitude. Oh, no, I didn't think he was... He used to get a ton of red cards, didn't he? He was one of these players that just was a very, very, seemingly a very dirty player, or certainly a very committed physical player.
I don't remember having a bad attitude, though.
No, but a bad style on the pitch, perhaps.
Okay.
A very aggressive style on the pitch, okay, that certainly won him no favours with the opposition or indeed referees. And Dean Morgan was my winger. Again, another player I just never really took to.
Blast on the past, Dean Morgan. Part of that sort of
0405.
Yeah, one of those.
Signed from Wickham, possibly.
Luton.
Yeah, it was Luton.
One of those transitional players, wasn't he, between that great sort of Pardew side that almost had two back-to-back promotions and then the couple, you know, in amongst Lloyd Owusu and Paul Brooker, people like that. So, yeah. And who makes it up front?
Up front, Leroy Leiter. I think if you did a Google Images search of Leroy Leiter,
do a Google Image search of Leroy Leiter at work.
Well, have Say Search on if you do.
Yes.
We'll say no more on that. And again, going back to the badass, Pog, who I think just has to be one of the downright coolest people to ever don the Reading Football Club shirt, but at the same time a bad attitude at times as well, because
he did around transfer windows, didn't he?
Certainly did. And if you know, we always used to go onto our Russian websites and translate a little bit of a Russian interview, and he never really spoke in glowing terms about the club or his situation there either. So very much a badass and a bad attitude. I think he really combined the two, but you know, we all loved him.
Yeah, well, you've had your say with a few suggestions. Again, a lot of the same names coming up. Alex Everson says Guthrie, Fay, Mills, Halford and Leiter. Just a firm sage, which is Harry, says Royston, Drenter. Hugh goes for Drenter, Blackman, Mills, Fay, Halford, Stack and Sulky Hyun, simply for the pun of Sulky Hyun. He's here all week.
I like it.
Yeah, again, most of the same names coming up. I'm sure there are lots more bad attitude people that we're forgetting, probably because we've pushed them to the recesses of our mind. But yeah, get in touch with us at the Tilehurst End and let us know your bad attitude 11. In the meantime, we've got much more of your feedback in the mailbag.
The Tilehurst End podcast. Read the blog on thetilehurstend.com.
So once again, a massive thank you to everyone who has got in touch with us in the mailbag this week via at the Tilehurst End on Twitter using hashtag TTE podcast. Those of you who sent in emails to tilehurstend@gmail.com, and those of you who visited our Facebook page at facebook.com/tilehurstend. If you do give us a like on Facebook and follow us there, you'll also be able to see our match day videos where the two of us were in action this week.
Putting faces to the names.
Yep, you can see why so many people have given us the tag of face for radio. Mm. And you can also check out lots of other good stuff as well. So give us a like on there and get involved. It's one of the easiest ways to get the Tilehurst End content straight to whatever device you access it on. It all counts. It all counts, people. But thank you for those of you who've gone the extra mile to get in touch with us today. We'll start with Matt Williams, who is the man behind our What Happened to the 106 series, which today, where they had the article up, looking at what happened next to Graham Murty.
Captain Leader legend.
Indeed. So if you want to find out sort of what happened to Mert, it's not just after the season, but he sort of looks at where he came from, what happened in that 106 season and what happened to him next. Very much encourage you to go and check that out. He's already had two pieces up. You can also check out what happened to Kevin Doyle. And so he'll be going through the squad week by week. So keep an eye out for those. In the meantime, he sent us in a two-part question. He says, two thoughts for the show. Number one, who would you look to build around the side? Who would you look to build the side around next year? Tishbola, Evans, Samuel. And number two, which teams have most impressed you against Reading this season? Thought Cardiff were poor for playoff hopefuls. Well, on the second one, I think we both sort of agreed there's not been an awful lot of tremendous quality this year. To me, the only side that's genuinely impressed me were Burnley.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were going through a very good phase in our season when we beat the likes of Middlesbrough at home, so you can't even say that they're really contenders. There haven't been too many sides that have come to the Medeski Stadium and you've thought, you know, these are significantly better than us, or they deserve to be in a far higher position than us. The one thing I do think is that, and you saw it with a side like Cardiff today, the way their front on Saturday, the way their front three worked, they all knew where each other were, they were all rotating, they're all very fluid. And I think that's one of the frustrating things when you look at the current Reading side, is it's all very structured and it's all very by the numbers. Whereas I think the Cardiff front three had a lot more license to, you know, if you want to go and chase a flick on, if you want to move around, try this. And so I think teams have looked impressive in spells, and certainly we made a few teams look impressive that haven't been very good at all. But yeah, there haven't been too many teams that have come here and I've thought, these are a class above.
Except for Wednesday, started really well against us, I thought, and then just completely went into their shells.
Yeah,
when they got the goal.
That was like 1-0 or 2-0 up.
They went 1-0 up, and they could have had another, and they went 1-0 up, and then I think we scored an equaliser through Jake Cooper. But yeah, they looked good for that.
Wasn't it them in the cup as well? They went 2-0 up and then got a red card.
No, it's Huddersfield.
Oh, it's Huddersfield.
Another Yorkshire team.
They looked very good against us.
Yeah, don't confuse the two. You'll upset Huddersfield fans. All of those who listen to us. Don't all speak up at once. Right. And on the second part of his question, who would you look to build the side around next year out of the squad? Any of those names mentioned? Tish Boller, Evans, Samuel?
Well, we haven't really seen anything of Evans, so you can't say him. Tish Boller we've seen in limited action, although I don't think you'd want to build a side around a defensive midfielder. I'm struggling, to be honest.
If out of those names, I would say Tish Boller is the big thing, because I really think he can go on to be a real Leisurewood figure, a real sort of pivot that the side's built around. He's shown so much for such a young player. You forget how young he is and how inexperienced he is, and he was doing so well. I think if you look at Reading's record with and without him in the side, it sort of goes to show how important he has been and how much he's been missed when he's been injured. He's going to be a big focal point. Jan Kernbeek, we're going at completely the other end of the scale. I think he's going to be a big part. We've seen him get the best out of other strikers, so whether he'll be the man to get the best out of a Dominic Samuel or whoever comes in. Paul McShane and Stephen Quinn as well, two absolute rocks. They've not let themselves down at all this season at all. No. So they're going to be very big as well, especially McShane as club captain. So any other names stand out to you?
No, and they're just about the only players that you'd want to see on the team sheet that are probably definitely going to be here next season. I mean, I think Danny Williams could still have a big part to play if he stays here, but he seems to be pining for a move. And then you've got a lot of other players who are either not especially sensational or won't be here. A lot of our loan players, you look at the likes of Vidra, you look at John, who can be brilliant and most of the time is very frustrating. Kanu, who seems to be in the form of his life but is probably going to be leaving as well. So there's a lot of sort of spaces that are going to need to be filled. And in terms of who you can actually structure the team around, I think you've only got about four or five players.
Yeah, well, Alex Emery raised that point about the transition. He says, what state are we going to be in once all of our loans leave? Do you think it will be a positive opportunity to bring through youth or too big of a rebuilding task which could harm us next season?
It's definitely going to harm us next season. If you not only look at the players that are going to be leaving us on loan, but also the players that are going to be leaving us on free transfers as well, the likes of Hal Robson-Kanu.
Anton Ferdinand,
possibly. If he wants to stick around, Andrew Taylor, again, that's an... he's only on loan, actually. There is not only starters, but a little bit of depth as well that is going to need to be filled. Do we want to be relying on the youth? No. Do we want to naturally blend them into the squad? Yes. But the last thing you want, and I think it's obviously the dream of everyone to have 11 players that were born and bred and raised and taken through the Reading Academy, but you don't get 11 championship players that are good enough to come through the academy and play for us. So it's going to be very much a slow build, and I think as much as anything, we need to set the expectations a bit lower now, because it's not going to be a challenge next season.
Yeah, I do think you are getting to the point with some of the academy players where they need to either make that step up into the team or we need to move them on. Dom Samuel's now had best part of 18 months out on loan in League One, and if he can't come in and make that step up to the Championship next season, you have to ask, well, is he ever going to do it? Players like Aaron Coole are running out of time at youth level, where they again really need to sort of make an impact. If not at Reading, then somewhere else. Tish Boller, we know, can make the step up. Fosu had that such a bright burst onto the scene with that one game and glimpse of pre-season, but he's been doing well apparently for the under-21s, and he had an okay spell at Fleetwood, but again you're going to have to hope that with another year of professional football under his belt he'll be better. So it is going to be a make or break time. People like Jordan Obita and Jake Cooper as well, who don't forget how young they still are. So there is going to be a very young core, and that is good, and that is something you really do like to see. So and with all the noises that are coming out of the Thai camp, or should I say lack of noises, I wouldn't expect massive amounts of money to play with. So I think you'll see, again, a couple more loans come in, a couple of solid signings, but I wouldn't expect miracles. Just while we're talking about loanees as well, Johnny Harris says, who would you sign permanently out of the current loan players? For me, Ola John for the sell-on value.
I wouldn't sign Ola John.
I don't think he's in our price range.
I don't think he's in our price range, and frankly, I don't think he's a good enough player.
Controversial.
I know, but I've been expressing these opinions. I think for all his tricks and flicks, he really, really doesn't deliver. And you only have to look at the last three games when he's missed...
five chances.
Yeah, well, golden chances. You'd say chances that you would hope a player of his supposed ability could score. So I don't think he's delivering. In terms of the loanings, I'd probably sign Andrew Taylor if he would want to come to us on a decent wage, because I think he can be a decent left back and, you know, certainly a good backup slash rotational player. Matty Vidra, I'd love to come here, but I doubt he will. Again, price range. Of the others...
no, to Pearson, presumably.
Well, no.
The interesting one for me going into next season is Michael Hector. I can't, especially with Chelsea being likely out of European competition next season, and them only having those 38 league games to focus on, I can't see a place for him at Chelsea. So it's just a case of whether they see him getting another season in the Championship as the way forward, or if they see him in the Premier League. But if you had that first offer, if you had the first refusal and Hector was willing to come, would you take him as one of your loanies?
Definitely. I think in the last two or three games or two or three weeks, you've certainly seen what he can do, and you've certainly seen why Chelsea decided to take a punt on him, not only because they thought they could make a little bit of money out of him, but because he's a damn good player as well at his time. I just get the feeling that he may go to a sort of lower Premier League side, a bit like someone like Nathan Ake has done, rather than Nathaniel Chalobah heading out to Napoli and barely playing for them. God, we miss him, don't we?
Could have done with him this season, and Ake.
Yeah, could have done with a lot of them. But, if Hector was available, I'd definitely bring him back, as much for the squad depth as anything.
Yeah, I'm not as convinced. It's simply because I'd like to see Brian go back to 4-4-2, and I don't fully think he's cut out for that out-and-out midfield role in just a two. And again, defensively, he's good, but I don't think he's been fantastic. He just blows hot and cold. I'm not suggesting he's got an attitude problem, but he's still got... there's still something that doesn't sit right with me. I think he sees himself playing at a much higher level, and I think his concentration can wander. So for that reason, I would say continue to do your development elsewhere, because I want to be building now and seeing where that goes. Right, moving on to Nick Beckett. He says, the criticism of Gareth McCleary is unfair. He played two tournaments last summer, one with an injury and had no break. It's not a surprise he can't get into any kind of form this season. And with another tournament this summer, next season could be the same. Now, we brought this up on the podcast extra on Friday with myself and Charles, Johnny. Again, looking at why GMAC, and Charles was very keen. Sort of, he was the one player he really wanted to see burst into form in the second half of the season. Do you think the criticism is unfair, or do you think he has underperformed?
I think he has underperformed this season because, much like many wingers, if he excites you and can do a trick and a flick but doesn't really deliver the end product, you can sort of be caught up in the, you know, in the fancy stuff. And I think to that extent, Gareth McCleary for the last couple of seasons has been below form. The odd spectacular goal and the odd, you know, dummy on the right wing aside. But you have to give credit to him. I thought on Saturday he was probably our best player on the park once he came on the pitch. And he certainly looked like he had the bit between his teeth and wanted to... he looked like he was fully over his injuries, and he looked like he wanted to impress. So, you know, I'm hopeful that in this last part of the season he can convince Brian that, you know, he's the man to play on the right wing once Hal leaves, assuming Hal leaves. And, you know, I'm hopeful that he can bounce back to a little bit of form. But the problem is, when you get to that age and you lose that little burst of pace or that little bit of confidence, it can be very tough to get it back, especially as a winger when you rely on your pace and trickery.
Also, am I being a little bit overly cynical to say that I don't want him to get into too good a form, because he is still one of those saleable assets and one of the best players at the club?
But would you sell him? If someone offered you 2-3 million for him, would you sell him?
I don't know. I think it would very much depend on what the offer was and what Gareth McCleary was thinking.
Yeah.
I think probably at his age, like you say, he's probably ready again for Premier League football, but I wouldn't sell him on the cheap.
No.
I think you'd be looking for at least sort of 3.5, 4, about the same you got for Nick Blackman, to be honest. He's probably got more of a pedigree than Blackman has, so I'd be expecting at least that. And he's got a couple of years left on his deal as well. So if we got 3.5 for Blackman when he had 6 months left on his deal, you'd be expecting to get that as a minimum for McCleary. But by the same token, I can't, even if he does go on a really good run of form, I can't see teams stumping that up. So I'm just sort of more wary about a team coming in with sort of a low punt and really sort of unsettling him. So we'll see how that goes. Moving on, Evan Collins. Do you think the current squad would benefit from a Wally Downs or Martin Allen type assistant to McDermott?
Well, in the case of a defensive coach, no, because I think generally Brian McDermott, like I said earlier in the podcast, he knows how to structure his teams to make them hard to beat, and I don't think you'd need that sort of thing like a Wally Downs or Martin Allen, who was certainly Wally Downs focused on the defence. I'm not sure exactly what Martin Allen focused on, but I assume it was that as well. I don't think that's necessary at all. I think defensively, structurally, we're pretty sound. It's more at the other end of the pitch that, you know, we're throwing it away, really.
Yeah, Chris Davis has been very anonymous so far.
I've seen him come out into the dugout occasionally and wave around.
Yeah, being anonymous isn't always a bad thing. I said Nigel Gibbs wasn't exactly the most upfront assistant manager, though he was certainly more visible than Davis's. But I suppose you don't want to come out all guns blazing when you're new into the job. Moving on to Brian Davis. I can't be the only person that looks at this squad list and gets totally dejected. The highest scorer for us is a winger that most people want rid of. Not one striker with double-digit career goals for us. Now, to put into context, he's looking at the squad list you get in the back of the programme that sort of lists all of Reading appearances and goals. And the highest scorer is Hal Robson-Kanu, who I think has got 25 goals, league goals for Reading anyway. And that is... you are looking at an era now where there are so few stalwarts. I mean, Hal Robson-Kanu is the longest-serving player. Yeah. And when he goes this summer, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head who will be the longest-serving man there.
I mean, it depends if you count someone like Jake Cooper.
Or Jordan Obita. I mean, Jordan Obita sort of made his debut best part of 5 years ago in a League Cup tie. Gunter's been there 4 years now, yeah. But it's getting thin.
There aren't too many players.
I don't think...
It's like we were saying earlier with the who do you structure your team around. There aren't too many players to... who really inspire you that confidence that you'd say, okay, this is a quality player who can drive us and the rest of the team onto greatness. There aren't that many players around anymore.
Yeah, you do hope that the likes of Samuel, Tishbola, Cooper, Obita, Akulavi comes through the ranks, Fosu. You hope some of those can go on to be the type of players that knock up 200, 300 games for Reading, like Robson-Kanu did, like Jem Karachan, Alex Pearce did. You hope that there are those players coming through because you need those. You need those bonds. You know, those players that you can get behind year in, year out, and you look forward to seeing play. You know, the interview we did with Stuart Lovell just sort of brought back memories of players like that were there for 7-8 years, and you saw them grow, and you saw them develop, and you saw them, you know, really reach their peak. And you do miss that. Well, I've missed that anyway over the last couple of seasons. Hugh comes back again with Player of the Season cards were handed out against Cardiff. Is it difficult to choose after another mediocre season?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we did it on our live video
thing, didn't we?
And it was a tough decision. I mean, honestly, I would probably give it to Nick Blackman because, okay, he's gone for half the season and he's not the nicest of people. But let's be honest, where would we be without him?
Yeah, I'm going to leave most of this debate. I'm going to swerve this because I think with 9 games a season, there's still a lot to be decided. And also, we're more than likely going to cover this in another week. So for the moment, I do agree with you. It is tough to choose. But we'll save our actual full-on debate about who gets it for another time. Sorry, Hugh. Not fobbing you off, really. And one of our assistant editors, Ollie Allen, comes in with today's final question. He says, thoughts on Hull scrapping season tickets? Would it be something you think would work at Reading? Now, John, are you familiar with this story?
I'm familiar, although, I believe it, the full details aren't out yet. So,
yeah, it's for those of you who missed this story, Hull have announced that they will no longer be releasing traditional season tickets, where you pay for your ticket out front, you've got a seat in this part of the ground, and it costs you X amount to sit in the stand. They are now going for a monthly membership scheme, which they claim can save fans a lot of money, but the problem is that the membership, it gets rid of concession prices. So instead, if you want a cheaper ticket, you go and sit in a cheaper part of the ground. So if you've sat in your seat since the KC was built, 10 years ago, you might suddenly find yourself in, actually, the seat where you're in now is the highest monthly category price of £55 a month. So suddenly you're going to have to move. Likewise, if you're a kid who's sat in that part of the stand for, you know, £10 or £15 a game, suddenly you're paying £40 more. So
I do like this sort of hierarchical dividing of how much money you earn as a fan. It's quite a new, quite a novel concept,
isn't it? It's ridiculous, though. If you go and have a look at the diagrams on their website, you might get the laughable situation of a load of people clustered in the sides of the stands where the tickets are cheap, and then nobody in the middle.
Yeah.
And people just split up here, there, and everywhere. It's not gone down very well with Hull fans, by all accounts. If you go and read their sort of reaction to it, they're not very happy. credits them for trying something new, but you would like to think they would sort of consult with fans before they come out with these plans rather than just push them forward.
Yeah, but Hull aren't particularly a team. Their chairman doesn't particularly think about the fans.
The Hull City Tigers.
Yeah, the whole, not even the Hull City Tigers, just the Hull Tigers.
Sorry, Hull Tigers, yeah.
Yeah.
How would I feel about Reading scrapping it? It's not, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think Reading have deserved credit for what they've done with season tickets, especially last season, introducing that new cash groove, which you benefit from.
For only one season, though. I mean, you know, getting back to adult prices next year.
Don't worry, you'll be hitting that retirement age before you know it. Ready for that, 2061 season?
The Tarlhurst End podcast number 430 or so.
I think we'll be much more from there by the time you get to pension age. We'll be looking at, we're getting into our episode 900.
Yeah.
I do not think I will still be doing this podcast when we're 60.
I'm going to
put it out there.
I don't think podcasts will exist when we're 60. But that's
3D holocasts.
That would be sensational, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just sort of transmit it to your wrist or something, like, you know, just bring it up like Star Trek.
Go straight to your brain or something by then.
Why don't we do this now?
When we're all ruled by Martians or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, this podcast has taken a strange turn. So back to the situation though. Would you like to see something like a monthly membership where you could say, well, I'm invested for 3 months a season while we're competing, and then actually I'm not going to renew?
I mean, you know, it's really tough to say without sort of knowing all the details and things like that. Personally, I wouldn't want to, because I think, you know, as a season ticket holder, you sit in the same area of the ground, you know the people who you're next to, you know the people who are around you. If you've got a rotating cast of people, not only from game to game, but from week to week in terms of where you're sitting, in terms of where they're sitting, I think it would just create an insanely strange atmosphere.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I think part of the reason that you sit where you do is because you know the nuances of the people around you. You know the players they like, you know the players they hate, if they're loud, if, you know, you can just ignore anything they say because they are fools. You know, that's part of the attraction of having a season ticket, because you are around people who also have a season ticket as well. It's that part of that in this together thing.
Yeah,
well, not to go too political on this podcast.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen how this goes. As mentioned, Hull haven't released the full details of this scheme, so whether it actually comes off for next season, we'll have a look. But fingers crossed, they don't change anything at Reading in the short term. In the meantime, it's come to the final section of this podcast. We move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Right, Johnny, we've had to talk about this mediocre bunch for far too long, so let's get through this any other business as fast as we can.
Let's do it.
That was the Tarlhurst End Podcast, episode number 90. Thank you, good night. No, okay, we're still here. I wonder if anyone actually turned it off then. If you did, you're missing this.
And if you fade the music off as well, so it seems as though we're going to be going.
There we go.
Bring it down.
Fool people. Yeah, okay, maybe I'll do
that. Get back on side. We're still here.
Yeah, that's my equivalent of going the extra mile. Am I going to go for that 50-50 tackle of putting in the extra musical bed? I don't know. Will remain to be seen. You'll find out in the next... Well, you would have found out 10 seconds.
You'd already found out, yeah.
You would have. Right, a few things to talk about. First of all, it is the international break. I'm sure you're all eagerly looking forward to a couple of England friendlies. Or Wales friendlies, or whichever country you support. Johnny, you excited?
I'm excited to see England's youngsters, although I'm not excited to see them against Germany.
You're more excited than I am. I really can't stand international football. It is nice when Reading players are involved, and we will have a few off with Wales, Northern Ireland, like Molly Norwood.
Robson Carr.
Yeah, if he's fit.
I did enjoy that the Cardiff fans were the only ones singing Hal Robson's Canoe's name when he got taken off injured.
They're going to be seeing him far longer than we are. Mm. Yeah, lots of players going away. Some international recognition as well. It's worth bringing up. Jake Cooper got into the England under-20 squad. Always good to see. Dom Higham, who's out on loan with Dagenham at the moment, he's in the Scotland under-21 squad as well. Zach Jules, I think, is with the under-20s. There's lots of, again, showing the good work of the academy, so there's lots of players getting recognition. We will have full international reviews up on the Tarlhurst End over the next couple of weeks, so plenty of reasons to keep coming back to the website. We're not going anywhere just because the international break is on. As mentioned, we've got lots of good stuff coming up on the website, including more from the 106 series. It is that anniversary of promotion. We've got a few things planned around that day, so very much stay tuned for those. Also, a big thank you once again to those of you who have helped out with a crowdfunding campaign. It is a big, big help to us and has enabled the improvements that hopefully you have noticed as the season's gone on. We want to do much more, and we need your help to do so. So if you have got a couple of quid in your pocket and you've got that sat in your bank account and you think, you know what, I really am going to contribute to that unprofessional joke of a podcast. They help get me through my commute. I'm going to stick my hand in my pocket and take it out and then put it on the keyboard and put in my details.
Alternatively, seeing as it's coming up to Easter, we will accept the form of chocolate. I'm Easter particularly eggs. Partial to cream eggs, so, and you can't get them all year round, so if I can get a few and sort of stock them up, a bit like hibernating, you know, just put them away in my wardrobe and, you know, I'll have them for a while.
I'm interested to know how the quality of the podcast is going to go up by the cream eggs.
I think it will, definitely.
Okay.
Get a bit of sugar in you, you know, the fondant middle.
Okay, all right.
I'm not being paid by Cadbury's here, but, you know, get a bit of sugar in you, bit of energy into the season. Maybe that's what the players need.
Yeah, we're still
not
getting sponsored by any bottled water people either, despite our repeated pleas.
Despite my glorious Buxton here.
Yeah, I've just got a can of no added sugar, cloudy lemonade. But you know the podcast is running on fumes when we're talking about our drinks choices, so not much more to say. We do have a game in 2 weeks' time. We do go to the former Reebok Stadium, now the Macron Stadium, take on a Bolton side who, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, are all but relegated. They got humped 6-0 by Bristol City last time out. If you do want a chuckle at Bolton's plight, we very much encourage you to go over to our sister SB Nation site, Lion of Vienna Suite. If you think our player ratings have been savage at times, go read some of theirs. They, bless them, they are taking this impending relegation in their stride with some very good gallows humour.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to go check that out. There's lots of other sites on the network as well. Especially if you're a fan of American sports, there's basically any of the big professional teams, there'll be one of our sister sites out there. Also, a Leicester site open today as well. They've hopped on the bandwagon just in time to celebrate the Premier League title.
Are they going to be launching a mug as well to celebrate launching onto that bandwagon?
Well, who knows? So, yeah, we're not going to do too much preview of the Bolton game. I think at this point, with 2 weeks to go and a raft of international games, it's folly to try and predict team lineups or anything like that. I will briefly mention, though, the Prediction League, which has really hotted up thanks to the amazing hot streak of Johnny Williams, who has come from absolutely nowhere to derail the coronation that was Charles Watts' run to the title. Now, just a few weeks ago, it was looking grim for our Johnny. He was 8 points behind in the Prediction League, which, as you know, is either 7 game results right, or at least 3.
And the other person getting it wrong.
Exactly, correct scoreline. So it was looking grim. Mm. But this man rose to the challenge. The gamble-aware man that he is, he gambled on some results, and he has gone on a streak. He has got 3 out of the last 4 games spot on, with the other one getting the result right. So, Johnny, you are now level at the top with Charles on 28 points. I've gone completely the other way. My foolhardy attempts to catch you have only enabled Handbags and Charles, and Westy to catch me. Westy is now tied with me on 18, despite the fact I was 6 points clear. No, more than that. I had a 9-point lead on him at one stage. And Handbags only started the season halfway through, is only 4 points behind me. He got the Brighton game spot on as well.
So you're doing a derby from last season, and I'm a classic Brian McDermott second half of the season charge towards glory.
Yeah, so that is the state of play in the Prediction League. Do you want to give your prediction now for the Bolton game, or do you want to wait?
I'm confident. No, I'm not going to. I'm going to wait it out. And,
you're going to wait out.
Yeah, see how the wind is blowing on the day, what the weather conditions are, who the referee is, what kit we're wearing as well. You know,
because we never win in.
These things all make a difference, and I have to put them into my calculator and see what's going on.
Yeah, the Johnny Matrix. Mm. Well, anyway, means to be seen how that one goes. As mentioned, tons of content still going up on thetarlhurstend.com. Please check in regularly over the international break. Lots of goodies as well. We'll also have the Player of the Month vote, because we're not playing another game in March, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, we will. I don't know who it's going to be, actually.
Yeah, cause it's a wide open race.
The only good performance I can think from any player is probably Al Habsi against...
Paul McShane's had a good month.
Yeah, Paul McShane's had a steady month.
Mm, we'll see how it goes. Anyway, as mentioned, we are running on fumes now. We're doing our best, folks. We're trying to stay with it. As mentioned, international break. While there will be loads of content up on thetarlhurstend.com, there will be no traditional episode of the Tarlhurstend podcast next week, given that it is international break. We've got nothing to talk about. However, there will be 2 podcasts going up over the next 2 weeks. One of those will be with Ibrahim Asonko that we mentioned earlier, where he talks
Superman talks about
his role in that promotion winning season, and interestingly what went wrong, what led to him going on strike and missing, well, not going on strike, but missing that reserve game. He talks about that and how he feels about it now, and whether he would have done anything differently. And also, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I did sit down and talk to Stuart Lovell just before the game with Crystal Palace. That interview will be going up as well. I haven't quite decided if it's going to be a one or a two-parter. So stay tuned for that. That will probably be coming up next Monday in the regular slot here. No podcast extra either. Charles is dealing with being a new father. Well, being a father for the second time, a healthy baby boy born. Many congratulations to Charles.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be too concerned about the Prediction League scores right now. So congratulations to Charles.
So yeah, very much so. And also go check out the latest progress on Some of the Parts by another former podcast co-host, John Keane, as well. I think it's getting close.
It certainly is. I think it's beginning of April. And yeah, as we're coming up to the anniversary of our first ever promotion to the top flight, it would be a fantastic read to see how it happened.
Yeah, go back and listen. I think it's probably episode 86 or 85 when we had John on the show, and you can go and read, sorry, and hear much more about that book. But I've got my pre-order in, I know you have as well, Johnny. Very much looking forward to that. And as I said, if you do want to come up and say hello at the fans forum, I'm toying with wearing a Tyler Sten shirt. I don't know if that would be too geeky, or it might be too informal. It's a Hall of Fame ceremony.
Have you checked if you can put a table up and, you know, bring your mugs, bring your shirts, and just basically make it a free for all for everyone? A bit, you know, a bit like a bazaar, a bit like a, you know, a bric-a-brac. Just sell your stuff.
Yeah, flog our merch. We'll see. But anyway, yeah, if you do happen to see my mug, I said if you have not
our mugs, which mug?
Yeah, well, indeed. If you have seen any of our videos, you should unfortunately know what I look like by now.
You should see if you can get Brian McDermott to drink out of a Tyler's Den mug.
Ooh, bold.
And you could even put him as one of the bandwagon people, because, you know, McDermott is a bit of a bandwagon.
Oh, controversial. Anyway, I'm done, Johnny. I'm done.
I think it's best we end it here, isn't it?
It is best we end it. We've talked about alien invasions, mugs and all sorts, so that brings it to a close. A big thank you once again to everyone who's got in touch and joined the crowdfunding campaign, and importantly, most importantly of all, to those of you who have listened this far. You are the true heroes of this podcast, and we're
not plastics.
Yeah, we're not accusing you of giving anything but 100%.
You stay to the 94th minute.
Yeah, and we hope we've rewarded you for that loyalty. So in the meantime, as I said, enjoy the international break, keep an eye out for those Sonks and Stuart Lovell interviews, but in the meantime, come on, you ass. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.